Welcome to Investing in You, presented by Affinity Plus Federal Credit Union, a show where we explore and discuss topics relating to finance, community, and life. Welcome back to the podcast. Joining me in the studio today is Kochi Prosper, Director of Investment and Retiring Services, and Carrie Tunney, Senior Vice President of Information Security. And today we're going to be discussing cryptocurrency, what it is, how it's being used, and how to approach investing in it, should you choose. Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, excited to be here. I think every podcast needs the old man who's like, get off my lawn to talk about cryptocurrencies.
We're going to make that happen today. So probably a great place to start really is at the beginning, like we always do, which is, what is cryptocurrency?
So the easiest definition on cryptocurrency is that it's a digital currency. And by that, I mean it exists online. It doesn't have any physicality like you would, like on a dollar bill or a $10 bill. And it exists on this software that you need to have what's called an exchange. So think Coinbase, Gemini, Crypto.com, something like that. You need to have a wallet to be able to then connect to that cryptocurrency and then be able to do buying and selling.
And how does that, I guess, what is the differentiation between that and maybe how like just a normal dollar operates?
Well, like I said, probably the biggest thing is you've probably seen these pictures that the media will put out of this beautiful gold coin with the big B and the dollar signs. Okay, that doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
No, there's nothing like that. A cryptocurrency is completely online. Okay. So there isn't something where you can put it in your wallet or have something that you can pull out. You have to convert it into something. So if you've never bought and sold cryptocurrency, your wallet will contain, you might have dollars in there and then you want to buy a cryptocurrency. You'll convert it over into that specific cryptocurrency. Then when you want to buy and sell it, you'll have to convert that back into dollars. So that's probably one of the biggest differentiators between that and a dollar, because if you go into the credit union, deposit your check or do something online, that money is sitting there. You can go to an ATM, pull that $20 out and go about your business. Cryptocurrency has additional steps. And like I said, it exists online. It doesn't exist physical.
Okay. And then I suppose the existing online kind of feeds into the blockchain aspect mm-hmm. of it. And I guess could you go into how those two kind of, how they play off of each other?
Sure. And you can get really complex into the blockchain software. So I'll keep it simple. And simply, the blockchain is where the cryptocurrency exists. It's a computer program, for lack of a better term, that every single transaction, every single cryptocurrency that exists is tracked and kept on that blockchain, that ledger. So if I hand you, a Bitcoin for doing something or buying something, that blockchain is going to record that transaction and show that Bitcoin A went to Mike for this amount, and that's what it's doing. So all of these transactions that are occurring, every single transaction that's ever occurred for that cryptocurrency is kept in that blockchain.
And when people are talking about mining then cryptocurrency, is that processing all of those transactions or encoding them? Or, I'm complete beginner at all of this. So, I'd be asking the right questions, but I just, these are all the terms that I hear getting thrown around, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out, how do they all actually stack up?
Sure. So mining is going through these transactions, and again, there gets some complexity with hash rates and things like that, but at its highest level, it is working through all of these algorithms and computations that, as a byproduct of that, those cryptocurrency are mined and then become live cryptocurrency onto the blockchain.
Okay. And then that's what people are trading. So you can participate in all of that without actually doing the mining itself. They're kind of like a separate.
Because if you think about Bitcoin, I think it's like 21 million is the maximum number before they'll all be extinguished. There's still a certain number that haven't come into production, and that's what the mining does. It gives an incentive to those folks to complete those transactions so that as an outcome of that, you basically win it.
Okay. So then I guess when they're all mined, are people going to still be motivated to process all of those? Or are they going to go, well, we're done here, move on to the next one?
I think that's a question that has yet to be answered.
Yeah, we'll just find out when it happens. Fair enough. So I suppose why are they so popular right now? And we were talking earlier before the show just about the fluctuation of price and what's kind of driving that and all the, I don't know, memes and everything else coming out surrounding it. So what's driving all of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what I've read is actually this is this generation's gold, right? You know, this is something for them. For people who are interested in cryptocurrency, it's like this new asset that I don't have to be a Wall Street insider. I don't have to worry about the man controlling this asset, right? It's kind of like when you get in the stock market game, you feel like there's so many mechanisms back there that are controlling this. And how do I win, right? Wall Street's always going to win, you know.
Right. Type the house always wins.
Yeah, it's that kind of feeling. And for the newer generation, I think they think like, hey, this is our generational gold, right? We have some control here because we can get out on the platforms, whether it be Reddit, whatever, you know, these chat rooms. You can get out there and say, hey, we think this is a good asset. Let's socially get together and make this asset happen, you know? And I think, and Carrie could maybe speak to this. I believe cryptocurrency was started, like, actually, I think it was started back in the 80s is what I heard. But it became really popular in 2001 at the .com kind of bubble being bursted, and people said, hey, I don't really trust the government so much anymore. How do we figure out a way to take some power back? You know, the dollar seems like kind of a scam, right? How do we figure out something that we can have a little more control over? And that's where I'm so interested in it, because I feel as a traditional financial advisor, I don't really understand how it all works, but it is an interesting concept of how it give some control back to other players in the game. And I think Carrie mentioned there's 22 million actual Bitcoins. And I think we're going to talk about all the coins that are out there. But I think I read something like 18.6 million Bitcoins have already been mined. And what a great question you asked. I'm like, what happens when it gets to 21 million coins? And there's like 10 to 20% of the coins that are lost or stranded out there. And I'm like, so those will never be recovered? And it's like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it, you know, because if you think about cryptocurrency, it's perceived value. There's a limited quantity, so there's some scarcity to that. So people are like, hey, this can hold value because there's only a limited supply of it. So, you know, it's an interesting study.
So you mentioned that there's multitude of cryptocurrencies. And I think in a prior conversation, Carrie, you talked about how many are coming online literally every day. Yeah. So how do you decide which to buy? You know, is there a difference? Like, how does one navigate the seemingly endless number of them? I mean, there's the big ones, Bitcoin and Ethereum and things like that. But, you know, how does one decide where they kind of want to make their play in this space?
I mean, if I had an absolute answer on there, we'd all be very, very rich. But
so we'll save that for off air then.
Here's what I would say. I think when I last looked at the number in November or December-ish, there was something like 10 or 12,000 different cryptocurrencies. Wow. The number's probably gone up significantly sitting here in February. So the vast, vast majority of those I don't think are probably going to be around for a very long time. And so from me personally, I would say you really need to do your due diligence on any of these cryptocurrencies. The ones that have staying power, they have white papers, they have use cases, they have websites that, you know, explain all of the different items of what they're trying to do. And a lot of these cryptocurrencies, they have a specific focus, their use case of what they're going to do. And I would encourage people who are interested in doing that, that's where I would go do my research, because there is a definite difference between some of them that are just kind of coming up spur of the moment. So for those of you listening who've seen Squid Games, there was a Squid Game cryptocurrency that came out. And I don't know that it had a strong business case, but there were millions of dollars that flowed into that cryptocurrency, and not surprising, some of that has left. So if you look at, you know, some of the ones that you're going to see in some of the bigger exchanges, those are the ones that I think probably have a better chance. But at the end of the day, as Kochi was saying, this entire arena of cryptocurrency, it's high risk. It's very high risk. And that's where the reward is for people who can find those things that have some staying power. Because I do believe very strongly in cryptocurrency. I think it's here to stay. But what it's going to look like, and, you know, is Bitcoin going to remain, you know, kind of the cryptocurrency people talk about? I think that's up in the air.
Yeah. Okay. It's so interesting to think about, like, Dogecoin, like this, you know, one of my friends calls it doggy coin. He doesn't even say it right, but the mascot is this, what, dog or Shiba Inu whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But like when it was created, they said it's a joke coin. Like, imagine me putting a stock out there and saying, hey, this company's not going to have anything behind it, probably no real assets. I'll never provide you a financial statement, but let's do this.
Invest in it anyway.
let's do this. And then you saw the rise of Dogecoin, and you're just like, what is going on? This is supposed to be a joke, and people are becoming overnight millionaires. Which, by the way, I got to mention the Super Bowl commercials. So much fun, right? Where the person's like, I'm a millionaire. I'm not a millionaire. They go back and forth. But, you know, that's scary, too, just to think about the difference between speculating and investing and all this when it comes to these crypto coins.
I was wondering if, on that point, I wondered if you saw a lot of, or if you do see a lot of comparisons between, like, the dot-com bubble, where there was just a mat, like, every company was a software company. And to Carrie's point, too, of, well, and then that whole thing came crashing down, and there were, you know, the real players were the ones that stuck around, and every other one just kind of went away. So I wonder if there's going to be a similar moment in crypto, or
I have a website, I can do business, here's money.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, there's going to have to be something that maybe, yeah, settles out of that. But
yeah, and some of the most staunch investors, that is what they'll point back to. They'll say, hey, don't do this cryptocurrency because it's going to go the way of the dot-com bubble. But I think, like Carrie says, we're going to see what rises to the top, right? Somebody on a podcast I was listening to equated it to dipping dots. So stay with me on this funny story. He's like, when Dipping Dots came out when he was a kid, they said, hey, this is going to revolutionize how we do ice cream. This will be the new ice cream. And he was like, okay, awesome. Well, he goes through his life, kind of loses track and doesn't think much about it. But all of a sudden he sees Dipping Dots at a local grocery store. And he's like, holy cow, they're still around. So the point to his story was, hey, Dipping Dots didn't change the world of ice cream. It was different, but it had some staying power, right? And maybe cryptocurrency will be the future of currencies potentially. But it might not look like what we think, but it still might be a viable player. But it might not totally replace the USD. It might not replace the euro or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's probably going to evolve and be something in the future as a big player. Like Carrie said, some coin will rise to the top as these are the valid ones.
These are the ones that you want to – yeah, exactly. And I think when it becomes more understood too as well, I think, which hopefully this will – help you point people in that direction of, like, where do you go to actually navigate figuring out what all of this, how it all operates, what it does, what it's good for. But I guess that's just a natural good segue to, what do you see the future of crypto being? Do you think more vendors, I know a lot of vendors accept it now, but I don't know how many people are actually using it to buy anything. I think at least the people that I know that are, you know, in that space, it's purely investing. There's no, I'm going to go buy a car with my Bitcoin, or, you know, the famous example of the, what was it, 10,000 Bitcoin for a pizza that's now infamous, like legend, whatever that would be now. The most expensive pizza in the world now would be. So where do you see the future of it going?
I mean, that's the $1 billion question, if you want to consider that. And I think that's the challenge that cryptocurrency has right now. I certainly invest in it. But as I was saying, you need a business case. And I think for a long time, using Bitcoin as kind of the surrogate, a lot of people were pushing that as this is going to replace credit cards and cash and checks, and you'll be able to buy and sell Bitcoin. But I think when you looked at its rise, to your point, no one in their right mind was going to think of like, okay, I'm going to use this to buy a pizza that's going to get delivered to my house. Because by the time that pizza gets delivered, that Bitcoin may have gone up in price and I would have been able to buy another one. And so, you know, it's more viewed as a store of value than anything else. And that's why I think these use cases are really interesting, because some of them are focused on very specific aspects like smart contracts that, you know, the ledger will be the record of attestation. There's aspects out there of using blockchain technology, as Kochi knows, for stocks. So, you know, you're not waiting for the New York Stock Exchange to open. You can buy and sell these security tokens, effectively a form of cryptocurrency, at any hour of the day and buy into these. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities on it. But I think that is the challenge when you have thousands of them. And even if you just go look at probably the one people know best, Coinbase, and you look at the couple dozen that are there, most people would probably be hard-pressed to know, okay, what is Litecoin going to do versus Cardano versus, you know, Ethereum and Bitcoin and so on and so forth. And that's where I think this industry, this world is going to need to adjust and mature and evolve to what specifically is it going to do. Because I just don't think you're going to have 10,000 forms of store of value like Bitcoin. They're going to have to serve a purpose. And I think that purpose is still being shaken out.
Sure. So it's almost if you're going to have a company, like what is its actual purpose? Like if it's to do blockchain really efficiently, then okay, you've got a cryptocurrency that's like tokenizes doing it, but the underlying tech is, and I think some of these newer ones like Bitcoin, I think is maybe not wholly, it's not very efficient at what it does, mm-hmm. and it takes a long time for the ledger to update. But moving to some of these different ones where they operate a lot faster, they can, you know, the use case for doing trades and things like that because of the pure volume of those that are going on, which I'm sure Kochi knows all about, can happen more real time. And maybe that's where you start seeing, okay, this is what this crypto actually does. It's worth investing in it for that reason rather than just the store of value like you talked about.
I mean, you bring up inefficiencies in the transactions. And that's where I think there is going to be some interesting things, because I think Cardano just came out recently and its transaction speed was faster than both Bitcoin and Ethereum combined. And when you talk about the amount of energy that it costs to do the mining, to do these transactions, I think some of that efficiency and how it can do those things is going to play into what the future of some of these is. But ultimately, I think probably 99.9% of these are going to go the way of the dodo.
Sure. And do you think that technology is going to bleed over into other industries, into the financial space as well? Credit unions, just the way a lot of industries do business when it does get kind of matured?
Yeah, I go back to the example I told both of you. If you look at where, when the first cell phones were released, and how much between that point to now the cell phone has changed, the use cases that came out of that. And there certainly were people that were saying early on, hey, this is going to be a great camera and we could put GPS on this. And then, you know, Apple took the big step forward with apps. I mean, I don't think many of us can envision a world without the ease of clicking an app for that. I'd say the same thing is how I look at cryptocurrency. I think there's a lot of interesting use cases, but I think some of those, as I was saying, now there's people talking about, hey, we could do this with stocks. We could do this with real estate. We could do this with transactions. all of those things, I think, lend to some really interesting future options for this. I still think this is very, very early, even though I think Bitcoin's been around since 2013, and there certainly were white papers even earlier than that talking about what some of these things would look like. But I think it's early on. But I think as adoption occurs, and you see that again, going back to the cell phones, the adoption, I don't think that where some of these phones are, the original people who came up with them ever envisioned that it's going to go. So another generation will take it. Another generation will take it. We'll see these things go in all different directions.
That'll be really interesting to see where it goes.
Do you think that efficiency would bring back some ease of, like, or maybe some more credibility to even the investing markets? Like you said, if we take this technology into more of the trading of mutual funds and stocks, that some of these people will say, hey, now maybe I feel more comfortable in that there's not somebody pulling the strings back there.
I like your example of the business for no reason. And I think that's, you know, it's hard to get your hands around the idea of something that just exists online. It's not something you can hold or touch. I think the use cases for these for a lot of people are hard to get your arms around as well. Of, you know, I don't understand, you know, wires, or I don't understand how money flows between different financial institutions, or I don't understand why if you're starting from that point, it's hard to get your arms around, okay, this is a business versus looking at like a stock where it's like, okay, this company makes pop. This company, you know, makes chips. Okay, I can get around those. I know exactly what they're doing. But I think over time, you know, more and more people are getting involved in it. More and more people are exploring it. And I think whoever's out there putting your money on the line, you really need to have an idea of where you think this is going to go. I mean, it's kind of the investing 101 type of things.
So I guess part of the investing side is, you know, I feel like there's been some legislation surrounding like taxing of crypto because it's an investment. Can you speak a little bit of that, Kochi?
Yeah, and the interesting part is I don't know how they taxed crypto before. I was really curious about that. Is like, was it the Wild Wild West? Like there was no taxations. Like if I bought crypto at 1 cent and I sold it for $3, like I just got out of there scot-free and didn't pay any taxes.
No wonder so much money flowed into it.
Yeah. So now with the new regulations on crypto, is they're making it just like other investment products, right? So if I own an asset, I'm going to have to know my cost basis, you know, what I purchased it for. And then once I sell it, I'm going to need to pay the difference on that. So like if I've held the asset for longer than a year, so if I bought Bitcoin, held it for 1 year, and now I get long-term capital gains on that investment, right? And if I sell it under a year, I'm just going to pay ordinary income taxes. So, you know, I think it brings a little credibility to it now. It just says, hey, we can tax this asset. You know, it seems more like a financial asset now because there's some regulations involved with this Wild Wild West market of investing. But so now it's a regular investment asset to where we'll tax you accordingly to your holding period.
Okay. And how should somebody approach adding this to their blend of investments? I mean, I remember when the Doge thing hit, I was out at Afton skiing, and that's all people were talking about in the lift lines. Oh, you went on Doge yet? Oh, man, yeah, I'm going to be so rich. Probably not the way you want to approach investing. I mean, that sounds more like gambling to me, but how should someone look at adding this? Like at what stage in the investment process should they be looking to this?
Yeah. So you said it right off the bat. Is it investing or speculating, right? And the problem is I think Bitcoin or Ethereum or Dogecoin at this point is speculating. It's a little bit of speculating. And even though, like I said when I started this, you know, I'm going to be the old guy yelling for the kids to get off my lawn, right? Because you got to buy mutual funds and stocks. But I think there's could be a place for this, but this isn't how you start. So when we talk about investing or financial planning, the first thing is we call it a financial order of operations, right? You kind of need to get your house in order first. You know, do I have an emergency savings account? You know, have I taken care of my basic needs first? And then maybe the first place you go is to my workplace. Like, do I have a 401k? Because that can reduce my taxable income. I could get some free money in the form of a match from my company. So I think that's where you start, right? And something like a cryptocurrency, I consider it to be 5 to 10% of your overall portfolio. This is like a, once again, a speculating asset, right? So I shouldn't be like 100%. I don't think you should do 100% into that. And actually, you shouldn't do 100% into anything. Diversification, it's a real concept, and it is a real way to control risk. And that's what scares me about maybe the people who are really high on cryptos. They're like, you know, to the moon, and we're just doing crypto. And, you know, we talked today a little about GameStop and AMCs and meme stocks. That can be scary. That can be a bad first experience. So imagine if your first experience is I went out and bought Bitcoin. I bought it at 65,000 in, I believe, July of last year, or 60 right in there.
Yeah, November.
Yep. November? Yep. So see, I got to keep track better of this Bitcoin. So November, I buy it at that 60,000 point, and I'm just like, hey, I hear the talk, and to the moon, here it goes. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting here last month, and I think we had a $32 or $33,000 price we got at it. So, you know, I'm 50% down. I'm sitting there going, I thought this was supposed to really go. And the thing we never really discuss when it comes to investing is emotional. Why do most people use a financial advisor? Because they want people to take someone to take that emotion out of this for me. I got how I'm thinking. I need you to help me control my thoughts and, you know, when I buy, when I sell, because I'm probably going to make an emotional decision. And I'm just scared for anybody who gets into this first 100% before they take care of that financial order of operations. And now I've lost, you know, 50, 60%. Now I got a bad taste in my mouth. Now I don't want to invest anymore. Now I'm just going to put my money in the bank. And with inflation at 7% right now, all you're doing is losing money with your money in the bank. And people say, well, no, I'm not. It's still there when I go to get it. Well, your purchasing power went way down, right? That's the whole point of investing is I need to keep up with inflation and make sure this money becomes more in the future. And that if I could buy a car today, can I buy that same car 20 years from now with my dollar?
Right.
So that's why I get nervous.
So I mean, in the news lately, there's been a lot with regards to scams involving crypto, and I guess not to end on a negative note, so we'll keep it upbeat at the end, I promise. But Carrie, could you talk a little bit about the scam? Because the last podcast you were on the last episode you did, rather, for this podcast was about keeping your financial information secure and, mm-hmm. you know, scams and things like that nature. And this also is an area where, and it seems increasingly more so, that more and more scams are drifting towards this realm rather than direct money out of your account. It's cryptocurrency scams. So,
yeah, I mean, the threat actors that are out there, the criminals, they always go where the money is. And just like in that last episode that we talked about, a lot of the same things I'm going to say now are in that episode as well. And that is, you have to know what you're doing in these applications, these exchange, these systems. And by that, I mean, if you're going to do business with Exchange X, Coinbase, Gemini, crypto, you need to take a high level of security to secure that account. No different than you would your personal information, no different than you would your bank account that you use to log in a mobile app. So, and I think that's a bit of the challenge in this world is that, as Coachy was saying, there isn't as much information on the various exchanges. Now, I think some of them, like I just mentioned, do a really good job because they're setting themselves up, I think, for the long term of where this is going to go. But there are a lot of exchanges out there that I would never put my information in because I really question just how secure they are. So anybody who's looking at doing this, first and foremost, do your due diligence. make sure that you feel comfortable that the company that you're going to be putting this information in is going to take that same level of care in securing your data as you are going to do on your own. Make sure that the password and the security features that you use are the strongest that you can come up with. Make them unique. You don't want to be using the same password for your crypto account as you are for your Star Tribune account, as you are for so on and so forth. I mean, you want to make them unique, because if something is compromised, then you don't have to worry that, okay, I used my email or I used my same username I've used for 14 other things. Now I got to try to remember all of those quickly and get them all changed. And then I would also say inside these, just like in other items, a lot of them do have additional security features, multi-factor authentication. Some of them will have some pretty rich notification. So one of them that I use will notify prior to a transaction happening. It'll actually text me and say, hey, we have a pending request for this. Those are the sorts of things that I would put in. Anything that you can do to put yourself in the best secure position is going to be the best way for you to protect it. Because keep in mind, as we've talked, the benefit of cryptocurrency is that it's fast, it's anonymous from the standpoint of, if you look at the blockchain, I don't know who necessarily holds the wallet that holds this crypto. But that speed also allows that if I get into your account, I can quickly take that cryptocurrency, convert it over to something, and have it long gone before you've actually realized that it's happening. So, you know, that security requirement really falls on your shoulders. And again, I'd encourage anyone that's going to do this, follow those same things, just like we say when you've got your online banking account or those sorts of things. Take the security of this one, if nothing else, extra secure, because of the fact that you're dealing with something that by definition is quick to move around. I mean, that's its big selling point, is the ability to convert it. So if you don't put a lot of security into it, that doesn't necessarily mean that the threat actors that are going to be trying to get into your account aren't going to do what they can to get in there. And as you mentioned with the scams, there are a lot of scams. I mean, a lot of the big names in the crypto space, you will get scams that say, hey, something's up with your account, please click here, and they'll fake log in, and what they're trying to get is your username and password. And if you don't have things like multi-factor set up, that makes it that much easier for them to get into your account. Because once they get in there, they have access to those sorts of things to be able to move and convert, and you could very quickly go from having money in your wallet to none at all. And there isn't much recourse that is available to you when that happens.
Yeah, recovering it seems to be very difficult. There's some headlines that get made about like big, you know, recoveries, but it seems like it's not at the individual level. Like if it's gone, it's gone. Like you're not getting it.
Well, I mean, the feds just were able to recover $3.6 billion in the Binix hack that happened. Right. But again, you know, the reality is the feds aren't going to put an agent on because somebody got into your crypto wallet. I mean,
we don't get our own personal like FBI agent.
No, Coach, yeah, you got a point.
So, you know, I was kind of wondering too. I remember the first time I wanted to buy cryptocurrency, like I went to open an account with like Gemini, and that was like a little cumbersome, like, holy cow. But nowadays you can like use your Cash App and just literally one like button press over. They're like, you want to buy Bitcoin? You know, you just hit a button and all of a sudden you can buy Bitcoin. Should a person be nervous? Like it's so easy on like and I hate to endorse a product or use a product's name, but like a Cash App type of app compared to something like signing up for a Gemini that takes, seems a lot more work, but it's such a like one click and you're there on another app. But so I was wondering about the security as you started kind of talking about all the security features.
I think we're only going to see more of this. I mean, you see it with PayPal, you see it with Robinhood. I mean, there's just going to be more and more ways to get a hold of cryptocurrency. And I guess I would just go back to kind of the theme that I've hit on here through this podcast is just have awareness of the company. If you feel good with the company that you're doing business with or the app, that you feel it's secure, that they take it seriously, you've got a relationship, then that might be one to consider to do business with. if it's one that, you know, you have no idea where they're located, who's behind it, how they operate, but you're chasing this brand new cryptocurrency that you think's going to rock it, that's where I think people get into a little bit of trouble on some of those, because there's no guarantees. You know, if you're at a PayPal, PayPal's already an established organization, Robinhood, those sorts of things. But if it's ABC Exchange, I would urge caution on looking at those, because again, you don't know what they set up. They can say they do it, but you know, the last decade of crypto has shown a lot of these exchanges have had some issues, certainly more early on than they are now. I think because of the fact that, you know, security may not have been as big a priority as it would be for someone like me who's looking to invest or get involved in that and saying, okay, this is my requirement. So I'd encourage anybody listening, make security the top of mind when you look at these before you go down that rabbit hole, because by the time you realize the security isn't where you want it to be, it's probably too late.
Hmm. Do you see any benefits to what the Fed Reserve's thinking about the regulations of the crypto? Do you see any of that being a positive step for the crypto markets overall?
I'm going to diverge from where I think a lot of people are going to go on this. I actually think regulation is the best thing that could happen to cryptocurrency. And I'm not a regulation guy by any means. But I think, you know, as you know from your knowledge and experience, the market hates uncertainty. And I think there is a great deal of uncertainty in this area. And I think to your point of investing and speculating, once that uncertainty is removed, you know, once the Fed, the U.S. government has said, okay, this is how they're going to be treated, these are the expectations if you're an exchange, these are the requirements that you've got to have, you know, some of the know your customer, the security requirements, all of those things, the financial statements. When all of that comes in, I actually think cryptocurrency is set up to have a huge run, because that uncertainty will be there. So if you're sitting there going, I don't know what any of this is, but now you have, you know, information that's similar because now everybody has to have kind of the same rules to follow, I actually think it sets it up, one, to be more secure. I think it sets it up to be more easily understood. And then I think it puts the average person who's looking at that, and certainly financial planners like you, it puts you in a better position to talk about them. Because right now, I mean, there's nothing that stops the three of us today from coming up with our own, getting it hooked to an exchange and going. And there's no information for the person there other than that it's new.
Coachy coin.
I know. That's what I'm thinking.
Let's do it. Yeah. Right after this, you know, spin it up.
The minute I leave here, you're going to notice a new coin in about a week. But I think that's actually a cool thing, because if they do get more regulation with cryptocurrencies, it could become a really nice inflation hedge, right? It's just another tool in a portfolio that maybe now I take from 5 to 10% to maybe, you know, 20% of my portfolio is, hey, if I'm worried about a huge long period of inflation, I could have a nice hedge here with the scarcity of cryptocurrencies, because it's such a limited supply. So right. That's why I'm kind of excited to learn more about it, to see, like you said, what's the case used, but really what is the applicable use of it in modern portfolio theory.
You're looking at me like I should have an awesome question queued up. Yeah. I just want to keep hearing you both talk, to be honest. I guess we could probably just close out with, as we usually do, one bit of advice, probably from both your respective areas, one thing that anybody listening to this can take away. So we'll start with you, Coachy.
Okay. Well, I think it goes back to our GameStop discussion we had early, kind of off mic, you know, of how, like, you can't be influenced by what other people's telling you. Or like you said, as you're sitting on a ski lift and people are like, hey, have you got in yet? They don't know anything about you. They don't know your risk tolerance. They don't know your financial situation. They don't know where you are in your financial journey. So just because something's out there making money doesn't mean it fits your life. Doesn't mean it's the best option for you. You know, it's really important to just sit down and kind of figure out, where am I at in my financial journey? Have I covered my emergencies? If I lost my job tomorrow, would I be okay? You know, before you say, hey, I'm just going to add this new cool thing. And if you are going to add the new cool thing, maybe not a lot of money initially, you know, and maybe you will miss out. And I realize this is the air of FOMO, right? We don't want to miss out on something, but sometimes it might be okay to miss out a little bit just to make sure your house is in order.
Perfect. And I'd say be curious. You need to know what you're going in. I'm a big fan, a big believer in where cryptocurrency is going to go. But I think, too, whether it's your ski lift example or Kochi's business, is that what you're going to base, you know, the rise and fall of that amount of money on? Be curious. Go out there and look. I know some of this stuff can be dry reading. It's not exciting. But if I'm going to put my money on something that I believe in, I need to make sure that belief is grounded in something. I still may see the speculative or investment, as I would kind of look at it a little bit more, go down. But at least I know what the reasons are. And again, I'd say be curious about the companies you're doing business with, because I do think this world is rife with kind of fly-by-night. We talked about Squid Games. I mean, there's a bunch other of these cryptos that people rushed into. And they weren't curious. They didn't think about it. To your point earlier, they got super emotional, like, hey, this is my Maserati right here. I'm going to get this. And then overnight it disappeared and you don't know what happened and you likely won't ever find out. So be curious, be cautious. And, you know, if you feel comfortable with that, I say go ahead and do it. But those are the things that are going to better protect you than if you're just hearing someone on a ski lift or deciding today's the day I'm going to go chase this thing and I'm going to roll the dice. Because at that point, like someone said earlier, it's just pure gambling. You're hoping that the dice go your way and the house always wins.
Perfect. Well, I think that's a wonderful way to end. So thank you again, both of you, for being here and discussing this with us.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Investing in You. We hope you found it informative and inspirational. Special thanks to Minnehaha Recording Studio for use of their amazing facility. If you'd like to revisit any part of the episode, check out the show notes on our website at affinityplus.org. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and you'll be notified as soon as new episodes are released. And we'd love to hear from you. Tell us what you thought about the episodes and what you'd like to hear on future episodes by connecting with us on social media. We'll be back with our next episode, but until then, keep investing in you. Affinity Plus is federally insured by the NCUA.